Welcome back to the Deep Dive. So, we have been digging through a pretty significant stack of material this week. Intelligence reports, tech leaks, some really interesting industry docs.
Yeah.
And it feels like the landscape for gaming, hardware, and even global compute is shifting way faster than we thought.
It's a really interesting mix of sources. It's like we're seeing these three different theaters of conflict, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You've got this renewed battle for power efficiency in handhelds, then the absolute extremes of desktop hardware, and then this this fundamental shift in how your idle computer,
yeah,
how it's about to be used by some huge company.
Right. Okay, let's unpack all that. So our mission today is to cut through the noise, pull out the really surprising facts, and figure out what it all means for you, the person who actually uses this stuff.
That's good.
We're going to dive into Valve's new, very strategic approach to mobile gaming, a frankly really tense design shift in a major AAA game, and Telegram's ridiculously ambitious plan to build what they're calling a people's cloud.
And this deep dive really shows how it's all converging, the software, the hardware, and, you know, the money. So let's start with the battleground that seems to matter most right now.
Small screen.
The small screen.
All right. Segment one, the handheld counterattack. So while everyone has been laser focused on the Nintendo Switch 2, it looks like Valve has been quietly planning a huge move.
A very significant play.
Yeah. We have some really credible leaks detailing the strategy and specs for the Steam Deck's successor. Codename is Galileo. And they're apparently targeting late 2026.
And what's so fascinating here is that Valve isn't just trying to win the horsepower race. It's not about raw numbers. They're making a surgical, highly optimized upgrade.
To solve what? Exactly.
To solve the two biggest problems for any modern handheld: frame rate stability and battery life.
So the silicon. They're using a custom AMD Z2 Extreme built on the 4mD process.
Which is very efficient.
And we're also getting RDNA 4 graphics. That seems like a huge bump, especially since the reports are pointing to much stronger hardware acceleration for things like ray tracing and FSR 4.0.
And that's the key. That hardware acceleration ties directly into their display choice, which is maybe the most strategic part of this whole leak.
I thought this was interesting. They're skipping IPS entirely. They're moving to a Samsung 900p OLED panel with VRR to 120 hertz.
Right.
But that 900p, that feels like an odd choice. I mean, isn't that a step down from the 1080p standard everyone expects? Won't that hurt them in marketing?
See, that's the genius of it. That's the whole strategy.
Okay.
If you chase 1080p on a tiny chassis, you just crush the GPU. You end up with unstable frame rates, or you have to use really aggressive, ugly upscaling.
Right, becomes a mess.
Exactly. So the jump from the old 800p to 900p gives you a nice noticeable bump in clarity on that 7-inch screen, but, and this is the critical part, it allows that new APU to actually target a locked 60 FPS on new demanding games.
So it's not about the pixel count. It's about stability. It's about the quality of the experience.
Precisely. The reports are saying the goal is to run something like GTA BI at a locked 60 on medium settings.
Wow.
Which would be a monumental achievement for a handheld. So if they can deliver that RDNA 4 power, a beautiful OLED screen, and stay under that, say, $600 price point.
And the Switch 2 has a very, very serious competitor.
A competitor focused purely on performance.
And the battery tech seems to back this up. The leaks mention silicon carbon battery cells, SiC cells.
That's high-end stuff.
It sounds like a 40% capacity increase without making the device bigger. That seems like a complete game changer for playing on the go.
It is, but this is also the biggest potential hurdle for them.
The cost.
The cost. CEC is expensive, and it's really hard to scale up production quickly. So if Valve uses this, it adds significant cost, and keeping that price under $600 becomes incredibly difficult.
So if it jumps to, what, $750?
They lose that strategic advantage instantly. It's a real tightrope walk.
A critical trade-off. Okay, so shifting from next-gen hardware to some very current consumer pain, we've got a major display crisis blowing up right after the launch of Samsung's Galaxy S26 Ultra.
Yeah, and this really makes you wonder how fast these manufacturers are pushing this new super thin OLED tech. The margin for error is just, it's razor thin.
So early adopters, mainly in South Korea and the US, are all seeing the exact same thing. A faint permanent green line right down the side of the screen.
Always on the right side.
And it's happening right after they install the January 2026 security patch.
And the technical theory right now is, well, it's compelling and it's pretty scary. The software update is suspected of mishandling the power delivery.
What, like the voltage?
The voltage regulation, exactly. Think of it like a dam suddenly letting way too much water rush through a tiny pipe. That surge of current, even for a split second, overheats the display controller and it physically burns out the circuits for those specific pixel rows.
So you can't fix it with a software patch. The hardware is physically broken by a software command.
It's permanent damage. If you see that line, it's a hardware replacement, an RMA. So the takeaway for you, if you own this device, is critical. Do not install that January patch.
Wait, just wait until Samsung issues a statement and releases a confirmed fix for this.
Your patience will literally save your screen.
That is excellent practical advice. Okay, let's pivot from hardware flaws to content design, because this next segment covers a really high-stakes shift in a huge franchise. We're talking Ubisoft and Far Cry 7.
Yes, so Far Cry 7, codenamed Project Blackbird, is apparently ditching the formula. They're getting rid of that open-ended, repetitive, clear-the-map structure the series has used for, what, a decade?
And it's about time, frankly. They're moving to this tense survival story. Mm-hmm. You have to rescue your kidnapped family from a cult called the Sons of Truth, but the real twist is the timer.
The non-stopping timer. You have a hard deadline, exactly 72 in-game hours.
Which is about 24 real-world hours.
Right. And it runs constantly. You pause to craft ammo in a safe house. The clock is ticking. You get distracted by a side mission. Clock's ticking. You get captured. You just lost precious hours.
It reminds me of the tension in Majora's Mask. But at least in that game, you could reset the clock.
Mm-hmm.
This feels way more punishing.
It is. It introduces this permanent gnawing anxiety. It forces you to actually prioritize, to strategize every single moment. For the Far Cry brand, which has always catered to players who just want to leisurely explore, it's a bold move.
But doesn't that risk alienating their entire core audience, the people who want to spend 80 hours messing around before they even touch the main story? Constant pressure can lead to burnout really fast.
It absolutely can. The whole thing hinges on the consequences being compelling. The reports say the clock running out doesn't give you a game over screen.
Okay, so what happens?
It introduces non-linear consequences. Specifically, some of your family members die. You keep playing, but your story, your ending, it's just fundamentally darker.
So it rewards efficient, strategic players. It makes you actually feel the stakes instead of just grinding for better gear before you decide to save the world. It's an interesting mix of freedom and urgency.
It's a huge risk, but it's one that could totally revitalize the franchise if they pull it off. It makes failure actually mean something.
That is a fascinating gamble.
Okay.
Let's jump from narrative tension right back to hardware tension. We're talking extreme compute for the prosumer. Leaked images of a monster NVIDIA card.
Possibly the RTX 5090 Ti or maybe a new Titan AI.
And the photos are just shocking. This isn't a consumer graphics card anymore. This looks like enterprise hardware that's been crammed into a desktop form factor.
Let's just talk about the horror details of the size. It's a 4-slot card.
Yeah.
4 full PCIe slots.
So it's instantly incompatible with most consumer cases. Forget about most vertical GPU mounts.
And the power draw. It's just staggering. It has dual 12V 2x6 power connectors that suggests a TGP, total graphics power, of over 600 watts.
And maybe peaking at 800 watts under AI workloads. Okay, so put 800 watts in perspective for someone who just plugs their PC into the wall. What does that actually demand from a normal home setup? Do you need special wiring for this?
That's the core question. And yeah, you pretty much do. You're leaving standard consumer power delivery behind. You'll need a specialized high wattage power supply, like in 1600 watts or more, and you better make sure your home circuit can even handle that load. This card is a hard line between enthusiast and professional.
So who is this actually for? If it's too big and too power hungry for most gamers, is NVIDIA just trying to sell enterprise features at a slightly lower price?
That's exactly what it is. It's explicitly for developers, for enthusiasts running local LLMs, you know, large language models like the Next Llama.
People who need that huge VRAM buffer. The leaks say 48 gigs.
Exactly. They need workstation power, but they just can't justify spending six figures on a true enterprise card like an H100.
So it's a specialized tool for the AI revolution running out of your overpowered home office. And that leads us perfectly into our next big story, which is all about how that powerful hardware gets used. The democratization of AI compute.
This is the big one. This is the infrastructure story that could have massive real-world consequences. We're talking about Telegram's Project Cocoon,
which is a closed beta launching next week just for their premium users.
Yep.
So break it down for us. What is Cocoon? How does it actually work?
It's a DPIN, a decentralized physical infrastructure network built on the Tion blockchain. The concept is actually really simple. It lets users with powerful PCs, think an RTX 3060 or better, rent out their idle GPU compute power to the network.
So when I'm asleep or I'm at work, my gaming PC is just churning away doing work for Telegram.
Precisely. Telegram pools all these individual high-end PCs into a distributed supercomputer, and they use it to train their AI models, host LLMs, all that heavy-duty stuff. It lets them bypass spending billions to build giant server farms like AWS or Google Cloud.
And what's in it for the user? Why would I turn my personal gaming rig into a temporary data center for them?
You get paid. You're compensated with TON coins or these Cocoon credits, and that's the appeal. The implication here is that your idle PC, which you're already paid for, could generate enough passive income to pay your internet bill, maybe even your electricity bill.
That is a profound shift. It turns a home PC from just a consumption device back into a revenue-generating asset.
Sure.
But what about security? Am I really comfortable with a major tech company's processes running on my personal machine?
And that's the trade-off, isn't it? They say it's sandboxed, that it only accesses GPU power, not your files, but there's always that inherent hesitation.
Sure.
But the financial incentive having your hardware pay for itself is so powerful that a lot of people are going to overcome those fears. It proves that for many early adopters, utility and reward will trump those initial security concerns.
It really shows that the biggest bottleneck isn't electricity anymore. It's just raw, specialized compute power.
And what's so wild is the scale they can get to instantly.
Yeah.
Telegram doesn't have to build anything. They just have to convince the thousands of people with powerful GPUs already sitting in their homes to flip a switch.
Okay, before we get to our final thought, a quick check-in on the lighter side of things. A classic Hollywood adaptation rumor. Amazon Prime's live-action God of War series.
Oh, yeah.
A casting leak has basically set the internet on fire.
Yep. It blew up after a screenshot from IMDb started circulating. It listed Alan Ritchson, the star of Reacher, as Kratos.
And the fan castings have been everywhere, you know, from Dave Bautista to The Rock. But Ritchson's has been gaining a lot of momentum.
And it makes a lot of sense. I mean, look, Christopher Judge, the voice actor, is the sentimental favorite, obviously. But Ritchson has that imposing physical stature, and he's proven he can do that quiet, stoic rage you need for the character.
He definitely has the right physicality for a younger Kratos. Before the whole Norse saga.
Exactly. It's a classic Hollywood leak, but it basically confirms the series is moving full steam ahead.
All right, so let's tie this all together. What have we learned? We've covered Valve's strategic move to 900p OLED, the high-pressure 72-hour timer in Far Cry 7, that monster 4-slot GPU for local AI, and Telegram's revolutionary DPIN model.
The main takeaway for me is that compute power is now the single most critical commodity. It defines what we buy, how games are designed, and even the basic structure of global infrastructure. The line between a consumer device and a piece of professional infrastructure is just blurring.
It's the engine of the digital economy, and it's being fed by our gaming PCs.
Which leaves a really important question for you to think about. As you're considering your next big hardware purchase, think about this. If every powerful upgrade you make from that 4-slot GPU to the rig you connect to Cocoon is now being incentivized to become a paid node in some huge decentralized network, are we witnessing the end of personal computing as we know it and the beginning of an era where every powerful home machine is by default just a piece of corporate or public infrastructure?
That's a powerful thought. If my PC is paying my bills, is it really mine anymore? Or am I just the caretaker? Something to think about. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive.